Is hers? Tell me!
Yes, I think it's...
How to get burned? How to get burned?
I don't know!
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today is my intrepid co-pilot, Sam Stepanenko.
Oh, I'm such a pagan. Such a pagan.
Are you now?
Well, not really, but maybe. I don't know. Just go with it, okay?
Oh, I'll send some blonde wench to make sure everything's kosher there.
Oh, my wife wouldn't like that.
He's a heretic. Conceivably, but hopefully not an unenlightened one.
What the? How does this guy keep coming back?
Like, because you keep inviting him.
Like, he's the most resilient Jeff we've ever had.
It's true.
It really is. You punish them and punish them, and they still come back. I mean, last time he spent a week in the cage, and he still came back.
I thought we even sent him out the airlock at one point. Like,
so I think this must be
the red shirt.
Yes,
he just doesn't get the hint.
Is this my sixth episode? Seven?
I'm not counting, to be honest. It's a Jeff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why would I count it? But he is the most resilient Jeff. He's the last Jeff.
Yes.
Jeff Omega.
Yeah.
Jeff Robinson.
The one who can make time to be on the podcast.
That's right. But the alpha to his Omega. you've brought along Amelia. Amelia Alpha? Shall we do that? Because she's our first Amelia.
Our very first Amelia.
Yeah.
The original.
That's right. And I don't know. I'm feeling this.
It could work.
Yeah.
It could work.
I don't know. Like, Jeff's. Ugh. Why'd you bring him?
You know, we do share a proportional letters of our names a little bit. Like, at least 25%. The same letters.
He breaks them up into percentages. We share a vowel. We're all getting along. I think there's an A in every one of our names.
Except for Jeff.
Yeah, that's true. There's no A.
It's such a Jeff.
Whoa.
What's your middle name?
I have three middle names.
The fuck?
That's kind of greedy.
Yeah, so it's good. It's to protect me from witches, I'm assuming.
Good lord. Who needs five names?
So, you know, if someone knows my true name, then they'll have dominion over me, is how it's supposed to work.
Well, nobody could spell mine.
That's more difficult, yes.
I think that's why middle names exist, actually.
The best thing about mine is I always mispronounce it to our audience, so I'm fine.
There you go.
They don't actually know how to pronounce my name properly.
Perfect.
That's true.
Anonymity. We're going to be talking about The Wicker Man today.
Very exciting.
The good one and the bad one.
Yeah, that's very...
The good one and the interesting one. I question whether or not it's bad. It's got bad parts. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny because before watching the new one a couple days ago, I was in the same boat where I thought it was interesting. But then the couple days ago was the first time I had ever seen both movies relatively back to back, and it's not.
It's not good. There's no question.
It's not good, yeah. And it's also really crazy how similar, like some scenes are like word for word recreations from the original, but how it so completely different.
It's completely different in the change of context for sure.
Yeah,
but I thought Jay, you had a promo, didn't you?
Yeah, Sam. Thanks for that. For that just horrible, horrible segue.
You
got a promo, Jay. Do it. You have a job to do. Do it.
Well, you know, I saw us getting into the conversation, and sometimes I know it's time to hit the hole, so that came out wrong.
What? This is Amelia's first time here, and you're being like that?
There's no... She's among friends. This is the way it is. You're going to get to know me now. You should have been here last week.
Okay.
I thought I was the bad one.
You should have been here last week.
I was?
Yes.
All right, but yeah, we got an event coming up. Hopefully we're going to be at the Calgary Horror Con again this year. That's coming up June 21st through the 23rd at the Clarion Hotel here in Calgary. You can get your tickets on horror-con.ca or in Calgary. You can find them at my shop, Words and Pictures, all three Video Game Trader locations, and Ink Toner and More.
That's strange.
Because, you know, that just says horror all over it. At least I sell horror comics, and then the video game guys have horror video games. And if you're in Edmonton, tickets are also available at the lobby. Now, we did HorrorCon last year. We did a nice couple episodes we got out of that HorrorCon last year, and there's some great guests this year. We've got a lot of guests from Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Friday the 13th and Child's Play. Among them, we got Bill Moseley.
Oh, so excited about that.
Right?
Yeah, we missed him last time he was here, too. So
yeah, I'm looking forward. I'm hoping we can talk to Bill Moseley. I'm kind of excited because he's got such a robust resume.
He does, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a horror icon. He's unquestionably one of those people, when you think horror, you think Bill Moseley.
Absolutely.
He's just, even if he's in something bad, he's just so watchable.
Yeah.
He's, like, very good at being the best part in any movie.
And he's got a great Twitter account.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his Twitter feed is so much fun.
I should follow him. I think I was for a while.
He's creative on his Twitter.
Other actors from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchises are Caroline Williams, Terry McMinn. She's the one who got put on the hook, the meat hook.
Nice.
Classic.
John Dugan, Edwin Neal. He was like the crazy dude who cut his wrists
okay.
in the truck. Yeah.
I believe it was the middle of his hand.
Was it the middle of his hand? I don't remember. Just go back to the episode we did, because, yeah, well, that was like,
6 months ago.
100 episodes ago. I don't know, 50 episodes?
You know what? So around 6 months ago, that was Samhain. Well, you know, so Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And for Wicker Man, it's like May Day. It's like the halfway in between, or Beltane, halfway between Halloween and Halloween.
Yeah.
And yeah, so.
And apropos for this movie, considering, yes, we are recording this in May, just a few days after May Day.
Yeah.
I think we actually watched the 70s Wicker Man on May Day. That was fun.
Nice.
Might become a yearly tradition.
Just for the songs.
Yeah.
Also attending Calgary Horror Con is Kane Hodder, Jason.
Ooh-hoo. Oh, Kane.
Kane. I can already see how that interview is going to go. So, Kane, how you doing? Yeah, it will have some crickets and maybe some ominous music in the background.
Kane Hodder also was Leatherface in the trailer for Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw 3, the one with the Excalibur thing.
So he only got to play it for a commercial?
Yep.
Oh.
But technically he's been Jason and Leatherface, so it's pretty cool.
He's got the Hatchet franchise that is kind of similar.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, and returning to the show is Eugene Clark. We talked to him last year. And Bob Elmore, Alex Vincent, Christine Elise, last two there from the Child's Play franchises. Okay. Danny Lloyd from The Shining.
That's kind of cool.
That's going to be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. CJ Graham's returning. We did talk to him last year.
Yes, we did, yeah.
And just another Leatherface here is R.A. Mihailov. I hope I got that right.
Is he from the newest one?
Looks like he's played him multiple times.
Oh.
He's in Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Hatchet 2.
Hmm.
So he gets around, apparently. But yeah, HorrorCon's coming up. And that again, that is June 21st through the 23rd at the Clarion Hotel in Calgary. And again, you can get your tickets at horror-con.ca.
That'll be really fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And other tickets you want to get, if you want to get a really great deal, go to seatgiant.ca in Canada and seatgiant.com in the States and use our promo code INVASION to get a discount on your tickets, your concert tickets, your hockey ticket, playoff tickets, if they're still happening by the time you hear this. I think they're still going into June, so
yeah,
you definitely. Can still get in on the playoffs. There's the NBA and
Major League Baseball starting.
Lots of great events, and you can get a great deal at Seat Giant, and you can get an additional deal on your tickets at checkout if you use promo code INVASION. So make sure you use that promo code and enjoy some extra sports and concerts or whatever, an extra discount on us.
Yeah, and listen to our episodes while you're waiting for the event to start.
That's right.
And, if it's a boring game, maybe also during.
Yeah, maybe also during. Seat Giant, they're a game changer. All right, let's get into The Wicker Man, 1973 versus 2006. The Wicker Man, 1973, was directed by Ron Hardy, who also directed The Fantasist in 1986 and The Wicker Tree in 2011. I'm interested in judging by Amelia's reaction.
Was it? It was Robin Hardy.
Robin Hardy. What did I say?
I think you said Ron Hardy.
Well, see, there you go. That's the way we keep a Jeff around. It's right in front of my face, you know what, and it's Robin Hardy.
I'll also say, but just to get out of the way, as bad as the remake for Wicker Man is, it's still better than the sequel to The Wicker Man, The Wicker Tree, by Robin Hardy.
Interesting.
He's dead now, so I can say that.
who didn't even want to be associated to the remake, so... Yep. Which is crazy in and of itself.
Maybe that's why it's so bad.
Based on the novel called The Ritual by David Pinner, screenplay was by Anthony Schaefer, who we've actually talked about.
Yes, we have.
Which one?
Murder on the Orient Express, episode 181, just a few months ago.
I love research, Sam.
I didn't get a lot done for this one, but I did catch a couple of the key ones.
I don't know if there are any other crossovers in here, because
Is
there? Okay, yeah. You're going to have to help me on this one, because I have some on the other movie, but not this one. This movie was budgeted at £500,000.
Wow.
So... I'm not sure what that would have been in 73, but that's kind of like double.
Yeah, in current terms, yeah, it'd be close to double. But
yeah,
in the 70s, I think it was pretty close to parity. I don't think it was that far off.
Okay.
Yeah, the big currency changes didn't start happening.
I couldn't find a worldwide gross for it, or at least a domestic gross for a UK film, but the U.S. box office was like, $60,000, $61,000.
Well, I know that,
really good.
Wikipedia had $58 million US.
Yeah, I mean that thing did really, really well.
$58,000.
Do you know much about like the release of The Wicker Man? A little bit.
I did read up on some of it. Yeah, like, there's different cuts in different regions.
Yeah, there was like a lot of stumbling blocks I had to get to even come out.
Well, there's a lot of nudity in it.
Yeah.
Like, which in 73, especially for U.S. audiences, those Puritans they are, I could see how I probably had a little trouble getting released there.
Well, Jeff lent me the extended edition, so I think the three of us were on the extended edition, but did yours, the one you watch, have the outdoor orgy?
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Okay.
did the one that you watch start off with the policeman like in London in Scotland, like going around just being a policeman going to church and stuff?
No, it started with him flying in. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. The extended one has a whole prologue just to establish him as more of a Catholic.
Yeah, that's in the church, and you actually meet some of his coworkers at the police station he works at. Yeah,
he's very uptight.
Yeah, he's wound pretty tight, and I can see why, because he's a fucking equalizer.
Yes.
Edward Woodward stars in this movie as Sergeant Howie, and when I saw him, because initially, I've never seen either one of these films. And
what?
I know, shut up.
Oh my goodness. You know, Jeff. I haven't seen a lot of great movies, but I'm happy you have seen them finally.
Okay, have you seen Star Wars yet?
Well, yeah, obviously.
Okay, good. How about Infinity, whatever?
Well, I saw
Avengers Endgame.
We didn't see Endgame. No, we just watched Infinity War like a month ago.
Yeah, about a month.
That's fine. I haven't seen it either. No spoilers, because nobody here's seen it.
And we don't talk about that stuff here anyhow. Often.
Yeah. Often. Yeah.
Mainstream culture.
What's that?
Unless Carlos is here, then that's all he wants to talk about. Christopher Lee also stars in this movie as Lord Summerisle.
There's your other connection.
And, what do we talk
about? The Mummy.
Of course he was.
Oh, yeah.
Damn it.
Episode 61.
You guys must have covered some other Hammer films that he's in.
No.
Not really?
No.
Just The Mummy.
Yeah.
No, I could propose a great fantasy remake of Horror Express. That'd be a great fantasy remake if you guys haven't seen it.
We'll talk about that. I mean, Christopher Lee, he got into this movie to kind of shake some of his stigma from his Hammer films.
He actually was the one who owned the rights to this before it got made.
Oh. Yeah, because it was him and the writer and then the eventual director, Robin Hardy. They were all just getting together to try to see if they could make a movie version of the book, The Ritual. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was one of Christopher Lee's favorite books. He was, like, probably the biggest champion for this movie.
Yeah, and he's the one who bought the rights to it.
And he also was in the movie for free, like, didn't ask for it to be paid.
Yeah, a lot of people did. Credit. A lot of people
for his U.S. tour to promote the movie as well.
Yeah, a lot of people took the free route until the movie started making money, obviously. Then I'm sure they got paid. But a lot of people did it for free just to keep the budget down on it. That was a lot of... because the parent company who initially got the ball rolling was already having financial troubles, and then so they wanted to get the film made. And I think during that time, the company did get bought out.
Yeah, I think so. There was a thing where the company that owned it went bankrupt, and then all of their assets got spread out to, I think it was Warner. But the reason that there's not a complete version of the movie is there was a vault full of film that was, I can't remember the name of the old company, but a whole bunch of their stuff was in this vault, and that was ordered to be destroyed when the buyout happened.
It was very typical of UK cinema at the time. A lot of Doctor Who's famously got lost because of that as well. But
they say it was an accident that they also trashed Wicker Man.
Yeah, well, oddly enough, they had their original cut, and that got sent to Roger Corman, and that's how they wound up recovering some of it. And there are some 99-minute ones, VHS releases, but when they wanted to do a restoration to Blu-ray and stuff, when they wanted to find that film, that was lost too. So in the cut you gave us to watch here, what they did was they had transfers onto 1-inch tape. They inserted into the film. Like, that's tough to clean up, so the quality really dips when those scenes come up, which was kind of nice because then you knew exactly what was being cut in. And there was one moment, I can't remember what scene it was now, but you could tell it was maybe from a work print, because I actually saw, like, I think a mic dive out real quick in that cut scene. I don't know if you guys ever noticed that.
I didn't notice
that. Oh, okay.
I
missed that.
It's super quick. You know, those extra scenes were kind of cool to see, even though I guess some of them I kind of understand why they cut them down, but... others, I'm like, well, the setup tells you everything about the main characters.
Absolutely.
So you kind of need that stuff in there.
And there was other scenes, too. Like, when we were watching it, Amelia pointed out that some scenes seem to cut out halfway through the scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they had full cuts of those scenes, unfortunately. I think they had as much as they could use. But, I don't know, it was pretty cool. Also stars Diane Cilento as Miss Rose, Britt Eklund as Willow.
Who's that blonde girl?
Who was the blonde girl who was voiced over by other people, and then her songs were somebody else. So, really, she was just a body.
Not blonde girl. Bond girl.
Oh, she was a Bond girl?
Yeah,
she was the blonde Bond girl.
Along with Christopher Lee. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh.
Look at that. And even her nude scenes were body doubles, so I think she was just a head.
You know, I actually
she was 3 months pregnant when she did this.
Yeah, I was only reading that this morning that she was pregnant, and she was only wanting to do scenes from the waist up.
Yeah,
and she went with a body double. Like, there's been a lot of different stories. I could definitely seeing it more because she's pregnant, rather than I think the more circulated version, which is she just didn't like how she looked from behind, so she insisted they got a body double, but. But she denies that.
I can't see that.
Story that, like, a lot of people spread around about it.
Being pregnant makes way more sense.
It does, yeah. Ingrid Pitts, Lindsay Kemp, and Russell Waters also star in this film.
And a whole bunch of other people that we don't know.
No, and
probably
Jerry Cowper was Rowan, the missing girl in this.
One thing I noticed while I was going through doing the research is a lot of these people tie back to the same TV series and movies, like this cast, almost all of them are also in Moulin Rouge in like 1963.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like it's a huge, like a large percentage of the cast was in that Moulin Rouge.
Well, you know, is the original Moulin Rouge also a musical?
You know, I don't know. I've never seen it.
Yeah, me neither. I know that the one thing I mentioned to Amelia before we watched Wicker Man again, which maybe helps explain all of the music, is it was shot as a musical.
Well, and I was wondering.
I was about to say, do you consider this like a horror movie or like a musical horror movie?
I guess the director has said that it's a musical.
It totally, like,
it feels like one.
When I actually finished watching it, I'm like, why has nobody done a stage play of this?
That's a great question. Yeah.
And I was reading somebody was trying and it just didn't quite get off the ground.
Because the music
Well, it was written originally as a stage play.
Right.
Right? Because it, the writer wrote it as a follow-up to a play he'd already done.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And one
I had read that the writer had written it as a screenplay and then was told to write it as a novel because nobody wanted it. And then, of course, somebody did want it, and then it wasn't very adaptable.
And, you know, this movie is almost
so dead. It's not much of the novel's in it.
Like, the original Wicker Man is almost defined by people not wanting it.
Yes. And somehow it made it was the number six best British film as of 2006 or something like that?
Yeah, it's still ranked as one of the best of British cinema.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I can see why. Even though it's really quirky, there's something about it that's like, you know what, this is a great movie.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not a very typical horror movie that relies on viscera and jump scares or whatever. I mean, that end scene's pretty terrifying. But it's, I think the true horror lies in these people on Summer Isle manipulating him from place to place just to get him into this. I mean, they give him every opportunity to kind of
get the fuck out.
Yeah. I mean, they've rigged the game a bit.
And the deeper you dive into it, like a lot of the residents also actively try to stop him from being the sacrifice too. Like when he was sleeping, they tried to mm-hmm. use the Hand of Glory to make him sleep forever and miss the
Well, there's a Willow who's trying to seduce him because they need a true virgin. Believer virgin. Yeah. And if he had just wavered in his beliefs and or something and got laid that night, they couldn't have used him.
Yeah. No, and I think they were all they were testing him to make sure that he was a worthy sacrifice.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Right? I mean, that's what that was all about.
But at any given point, if he'd given in and done opposite of what they were enticing, you know, what they were enticing him to do, he would have been fine. Yeah. They probably would have let him leave.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's part of the commentary, because there is commentary in this movie, which is and I love particularly horror movies that do that, mm-hmm. that whole juxtaposition of paganism versus Christianity, mm-hmm. right, and how staunch he is in his beliefs, right, mm-hmm. that he's completely unaccepting of anything that's not about Christ, mm-hmm. right? And he's very judgmental. And it's funny, it's hard to have empathy for this character because he is so judgmental,
mm-hmm.
and arrogant and aggressive. It's really hard to like him, and I felt that way about both versions of the character.
Yeah,
so at that end scene, which is traumatic and actually difficult to watch, I didn't really feel bad for him.
Like watching Wicker Man, the original one, again recently, knowing a lot more about a lot of pagan type things than I did the last time I watched it. Yeah, it is really interesting how much they try to convey, like, all the residents of Summer Isle, like, as not being bad people, even though they're human sacrificing someone. Like the way it's all presented is, like they're not portrayed as being the villains. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is just a way of life.
Well, it's because they're, they're doing human sacrifice, but they're chill about it. Like, they're...
and, you know, he was a perfect sacrifice. And
at no point did they see it as murder. This was an extreme... And I get the feeling it's an extreme case. They don't do this every year during their...
Summer Island says that they usually do use animals, but they're just... They aren't powerful enough or not acceptable enough.
Their crops failed so badly the year before that they felt within their pagan rituals that they needed a little extra oomph.
Yes.
A little extra something, something.
They need something special.
Yeah. Reading in between the lines a little bit, it's like this guy, like Sergeant Howie, is like their last Hail Mary. And if he wouldn't have worked, because the big question is, if he wasn't the sacrifice they were looking for, like, definitely Lord Summer's Isle would have been the sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew it.
I don't know if it was just me, but I kind of wanted, like, 1 year later, just to see if the crops grew or not. Like, that was... I didn't care if he survived or not. I just wanted it, like, well, did it work?
Yeah. I have to agree with you. I was actually feeling that, too. I'm like...
Well, like, what the fuck? Yeah. I want to know if it worked. Was this all for nothing?
See, they could have done that with the wicker tree, right? I haven't seen it.
All this,
but I'm guessing it didn't address
apples.
That at all.
No, that it didn't.
No.
Is it related at all?
So, Christopher Lee has a little cameo. It's like... He shot the role not long before he died, and it's implied that he's the same character as the one from the original Wicker Man, but I think it takes place on a different island. It's like a different group
of people. He publicly said it was he wasn't, but... That doesn't mean anything. That could just say, I don't want to sully my character from the good movie.
Because the thing was, is that in the sequel, there was the guy who was the leader of, like, this other pagan group island of people.
Was it a different island?
When he was younger, I think it was a different island. When he was younger, he met this man who was, like, a great leader of a people who gave him advice, and it was, you know, Christopher Lee's character from the first movie. Passing along his wisdom to, like, a kid. Is how that was probably the best scene in the movie, just because he was in it. But
yeah, that's the way it usually works.
Yeah,
yeah, the sequel that nobody wanted.
You know, actually,
a sequel, not the sequel, because there's lots of them.
I was reading about. Did any of you read about the proposed sequel to The Wicker Man?
I read a little bit
right afterwards. Yeah. Like the writer Anthony Schaefer.
It wasn't even right after. It was like mid '80s.
Oh yeah, it was a while later. The proposed sequel was that he survives, and it takes place. Like moments after the end of the first one, and all the police show up, and then they rescue him, and then it goes into a really surreal territory where he has to like battle occult forces, and it ends with him like jumping off a cliff tied to two eagles or something.
What the fuck?
And
well, that's very Christopher Lee though.
The guy from who was being sacrificed, the sergeant, what's his name?
Yeah,
he like comes back to the island to battle occult forces, and there was something about how. Even though everyone has aged 20 years, there's something written in the script about how, like, oh, this ritual was so intense it aged everyone as if they had aged 20 years.
Did you see the proposed ending for the original film where some producer like, hey, can you, like, soften this up a little bit? Like, maybe how he can live? Like, it rains at the end or something? Like... It rains?
So you just want to defeat the purpose of the movie?
Yeah. Really? Like, we all want to see that thing burn. Like,
it's what we're here for.
Know, it certainly would not have been the movie it ended up being if they had rained out the ball game.
Right?
Yeah. You know, that would be an ending where, had that movie, everything happened the same, but it rained at the end. Like, that would be them making a statement that, you know, oh, Christianity is more powerful than paganism.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, I do kind of like how it's a little ambivalent at the end, like, a little bit.
And
like,
I don't think it gives you that message at the end saying paganism's greater than Christianity either. No. It's just a case of overwhelming numbers.
Yeah. And, because they don't make the argument in favor of either one of them.
No,
they never do, and because what they're doing is still criminal. They're killing somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. So you don't say, well, you don't get the feeling that they're saying paganism is the way to go, right? I mean, sure, you get to have lots of sex and it's lots of fun, but but you kill people.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable trade-off. I can see why people would get in on that.
You know, I haven't read it yet. Apparently most of the pagan stuff from the movie comes from The Golden Bow, which makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a book that's like just a collection of medieval European rituals.
Apparently, Schaefer did a lot of research into his script into pagan rituals. I mean, I think it feels cut and paste as far as what the rituals are, especially when you think of the region. They were all Scottish.
Yeah. You know, I was actually thinking about this because a lot of them are more like Gaelic, like European, like British type things. But they do mention that.
That's why it doesn't make any sense putting it into the States. But
they're saying that on Summer's Isle, like they used to be Christian. There used to be monasteries, but it wasn't like it was Christopher Lee's grandfather who started up the pagan ways again. So like maybe you could make an argument that. Yeah. That Christopher Lee, like Lord Summer's Isle himself, comes from like British descent.
Well, I kind of wish that the remake had at least dived into some of the pagan practices that did come over, but were different. I mean, you think of where paganism is mostly known in Salem, and it'd be more.
They touch base on that in the
witchcraft.
Remake, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they certainly adjusted the script, even though I think 80% of the dialogue is the same.
Yeah. And out of context, but, there's a couple that are really out of place.
But it becomes more of a feminine colony.
That's one of the things I really liked about the remake is the fact that they did something a little bit different because not only did they talk about paganism, but Malice, I think his name is?
Yeah, one of the dumbest names.
Edward, I think, is his name.
I mean, gee, I wonder where they got the name of that guy from. Like, okay, we're going to be talking about like this female driven society, and he comes with malice. He's male phallus.
Yes.
Yes. Did anybody see that?
Not until you said it. I'll be honest with you. I didn't see it.
Now it's obvious.
Now it is obvious.
Apparently, the other one, because everybody's named after types of trees, yeah, or plants or whatever, and I guess there is a type of apple tree, which is called a malice tree or something like that, which kind of ties back to the first one because they were doing apples.
There's the one scene in the remake where the innkeeper's daughter just like walking by his room just with a basket full of apples and she's just eating apples. Yeah. And like that's definitely a callback to the first one. Mm-hmm. What an awkward way to like do a callback to the first one.
It is pretty awkward.
That's why the whole movie is awkward.
Yeah, because yeah, I mean they sort of did away with that whole Christianity versus paganism thing and instead made it a matriarchy versus a patriarchal society.
Interesting.
Right? And like that's what I got from this from the remake, and I like that they did that a little bit differently because it's not as a sensitive topic in the 2000s as it was in the 70s, but that the whole matriarchy versus patriarchy is definitely something that's become very much the forefront over the last.
It's a really interesting read on it, because that's one thing that I kind of really noticed, especially after watching the remake after the original, is like the original definitely has, like, even if you're not sure what the message is, like they're trying to say something.
Yeah.
And the remake, I was really trying to piece together, like, one of the fundamental aspects of The Wicker Man is that it has this core, you know, faith versus, you know, different kinds of faith versus each other. And the remake didn't really have.
Oh, they didn't do a very good job of it, but it was there.
That makes it a lot more palatable, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean, if you look at it, all the people in power are women, and the men don't even speak.
Yeah, they maybe imply they had their tongues cut.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. I was about to say that there's an implication there.
Yeah,
I would have loved him to stumble upon like a shrine that just was full of tongues or something.
Yeah, I mean, especially because that would be a nice throwback to the original, because they had the umbilical cords and the foreskins that bought that jar of foreskins.
Yeah. You know, there's actually a lot of really great details in the original Wicker Man.
Yeah. And they missed a lot of that in the remake. Like that was the part of what makes the original so good, is there are all these little fine little details, right? Where they focus on the homeopathic and sort of the classic, for lack of a better word, healing methods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so,
yeah, well, even the old church the old Christian church on the island was turned into ruins.
Even the whole like school scene in the original one, like the lesson that she's teaching the children, like is like a form of belief that people have had, and they're talking about like, oh, what does the maypole represent, and all of this other stuff. Like watching it, I'm like, oh, that all checks out. But then in the school scene in the remake,
they use that verbatim, and it doesn't make sense.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like you also, like in the original, they have the boys doing their thing, and like they're separated, but basically learning the same thing. But yeah, taking out that portion makes it not make sense.
It did not make sense, especially considering it's a matriarchal society, and then they're talking about the representation of the penis.
Yeah.
Right? Like and that's where they fucked it up, is they could have really sort of hammered that home in a fairly subtle way, because they were on the way, but they didn't quite get there.
What about the beetle in the desk?
That was fun, but weird.
You know what? The beetle in the desk still makes more sense than the crow in the desk.
Yes.
I also feel like the beetle in the desk is more sinister than like a crow flying out somehow.
They were trying to have more iconography with that crow. They were using it poorly and not understanding what iconography is. But the one character was dressed as a crow. That was Molly Parker's character at the end.
Interesting.
So I mean, there were definitely ties to whatever the pagan culture represented, and I'm not sure what the crow is supposed to represent in that particular case. Maybe it's the failure of the crops or something, because they were, in a way, it felt like they're trying to defeat the crow
in a way,
torture that crow. See, and so it's something that's kind of the opposite of what they're going for.
Yeah.
Or it symbolizes something that they're trying to get rid of.
Yeah, and I think the beetle sort of represented sort of the cruelty of these people, sort of suggested as a cruelty to them.
Mm.
But again, it is one of those things that didn't quite hit. One of the few things that didn't quite hit in the
But the women
one.
Felt
in
more cruel
in the original one. The beetle, it could just be a stand-in for, what was his name, Sergeant Howie?
Yeah. Sergeant Howie, yeah.
Because they're like, oh, like he's going around and round in circles, and
you know, that's a, oh, that, that, yes, I think poor, you may have thing. Just hit it there, yeah.
And mm-hmm. he's just like, poor thing, like you did this to him,
yeah.
And yeah,
nice, I like that.
Yeah.
I had something else to say, and I forgot what it was.
I don't know. You know, we're long overdue for the trailer for this particular film, so let's run that, and we'll talk some more Wicker Man when we come back.
Welcome, fool.
I believe in the life eternal,
as promised to us by our Lord Jesus Christ!
Sergeant Howie, West Highland Police. I am here to investigate the disappearance of Rowan Morrison.
If she existed, we would know.
You suspect foul play?
I suspect murder.
Sergeant, if I were you, I would go back to the mainland.
You wouldn't be around here, our lady.
Hail the Queen of the Bay!
Pagan! Where is Rowan Morrison?
Come. It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
You simply never understand the true nature of sacrifice.
Alright, that was The Wicker Man from 1973. Sorry I'm so late with that one.
Christopher Lee is so good in The Wicker Man. Like, every time I watch The Wicker Man, like, it's in the back of my mind that it was Christopher Lee's favorite role that he ever did, and it was his favorite movie that he was involved with.
He talked it up.
He really did. But watching it, like, I can really see why. He seemed like he had a lot of fun, and it was a role that he really, like, it had a lot of, like, meat to chew around, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and it's fun because he's a supporting character. I mean, he's an important character, no question. But he doesn't show up until almost halfway through the movie, right? And he doesn't have that many scenes. So it's interesting that that's his favorite role, because he's not the lead, but he has probably the most interesting character in the whole movie.
Yeah, he gets to do things we never really get to see Christopher Lee do, like that kind of almost cross-dressing he does at the end.
I mean, everybody's so much fun to see that
costume, but to see him frolicking and he's singing in this movie, and
yeah, and I'm like, oh, it's Cher.
Dead on.
In the theatrical cut, because I can't remember, it's been a long time. Did they have the scene where Sergeant Howie was in his hotel room and he heard people calling to Willow, who was in the room next to him, and it was Christopher Lee as Lord Summers
in the kilts? Yeah, that's in the
presenting up to the goddess Aphrodite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in the version I saw. Yeah.
It's like that's the first time he's in the movie and he delivers a great monologue. Then we don't see him again for like a while.
Probably about 30 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
You get the feeling Willow's that person to usher the boys into manhood.
It kind of gets that feeling, yeah. 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 But yeah, and then right after that was the outside orgy before or after that?
It was before.
That's right. Yeah.
And I just love all of the parts of the movie where like the police sergeant just walking around, just being generally disgusted at everything.
Yeah, and I mean, not having that introductory scene that's in the extended cut, I think that was there to sort of establish that he is a tight-ass Puritan. He has no tolerance for anything that's not, doesn't meet his core values.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like he's really tight-laced. He's really by the book. He's not super likable because of it.
No, he's definitely not likable. And both versions of this character were shouty,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And I think that's where the Cage version kind of went off the rails, because when Cage gets shouty, he moves into parody.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why I opened with the... Why is it all burnt? Tell me why it's burnt! Yeah. It's burnt! Whoa, dude! Calm down.
You can't just yell a question at someone four times in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, and I genuinely think that a large reason that the remake didn't work very well is direction. I think that it had a script that had some potential, and the director just went...
And it was written and directed by the same guy.
Yep.
Well, it's kind of become this cult thing as something...
Bear suit!
Well, unintentionally funny.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know when Cage decided to say this, but they're like, no, that was always our intent to be farcical with this. And offbeat and a little off kilter. I mean, giving things like Mandy and Mom and Dad, it fits now. But mm-hmm. I think he's just trying to force that into a narrative that's working for him now.
Well, yeah. I was actually reading this morning that someone had a great point in saying that, like, if you look at all the other actors in the remake... Nicolas Cage, even though it's a notoriously, famous bad performance, he's a better actor than anyone else in the movie.
Well, I'm sorry. You've got Ellen Burstyn
and Molly Parker. Mm-hmm.
I mean, but there's a lot of people who give like
some
very
bad direction happening,
like flat performances. Yeah. Yeah. And is Nicolas Cage's performance like, is he just working off of a bad script and trying to do as much as he can with it? Sorry, yeah, I was talking with my
his
hands.
His performance was inconsistent in this movie. Yeah. There were moments where he was really...
That was exactly what I was going to say. It's very inconsistent.
Yeah.
Because, Nicolas Cage is like Keanu Reeves. Like, if you have a director who knows how to use him and when he can be impactful, he can be very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lynch did a great job with Cage, and Wild at Heart was a great example of that. This movie is one of those movies that had a lot of potential, but one of the things that Pinner said about the original movies is they missed a lot of the humor that was in the original story, and I think they were trying to go back to that with this remake. I think that there was supposed to be some humor in there. It's just it came across unintentionally.
Came in the wrong places.
So I think that they were trying to sort of bring back the humor that was supposed to be in the original
story. Yeah, there's kind of I don't know, like a passive aggressiveness to the humor that's in there, all kind of aimed at Sergeant Howie. That whole society is very passive aggressive to him.
The dynamic in the original is far more interesting because you have a real sense of community in the original one.
Yeah, like it really feels it blows my mind that that's not a real place that they found and shot it there.
Yeah,
because it feels so real, and the community feels like it's been there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which makes his search a lot more interesting because you get that sense that everybody knows everybody in this community. So when they're saying they don't know who Rowan is, she doesn't exist, right? When they're lying to him, and he knows they're lying to them. Because there's no way that if somebody was born on this island and lived on this island, they wouldn't know them, mm-hmm. right? So, and you get that sense. Whereas in
and he's like a bull in a china shop. Yeah. He's like, all right, give me the roll call.
Yeah,
there's her name. You're all dirty liars.
Yes, which is in the
dirty,
remake
dirty
as well.
Liars.
Yeah. Right. But when they do it in the remake, when he first gets to the island there. He meets those three ladies, the three witches. They actually say, well, we don't know her, right? And they don't even know who Willow is.
The fucking rhyming old ladies, the ones that are talking in unison in that remake. Like, what are you guys doing?
You know,
I will
go on record and saying, since we've watched it, Amelia has brought it up several times. He's like, what were with those twins? Like, ugh.
Well, I think they're supposed to represent, the spirit of the island. At some point, because they're talking completely in unison, and they're blind. I think they're trying to represent the old hags that you see in, Macbeth and other...
They were very Shakespearean in that sense, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't work.
The only place it worked for me was at the end. At the end, it worked for me, because it brought just the slightly creepy when they're doing that.
You were literally the only one in the room.
Yeah.
That feels that way.
Okay, we can disagree.
Yeah, you know... Like you're so right with the remake is just so many missed opportunities piled on top of each other.
Yeah.
Like there's so much potential for interesting.
It does feel
things
like there's
there.
Good ideas that just didn't get set up properly.
Well, exactly. Like they set up the right at the beginning of the movie with that car crash scene. They set up something really beautifully, and then never used it. They just used these weird flashbacks that had no context to what's happening to him.
His whole story is about PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that is.
But it doesn't tie...
But it doesn't feed the story in any way.
Yeah. No, not at all. It's just he's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
You know, there's a two moments in the movie where there's supposed to be jump scares that are hilarious. The one was when he sees the girl who gets hit by the bus on the boat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then the other one where he, wakes up from having a dream about finding Rowan underwater, but then she's in his arms.
Mm-hmm.
When that car gets hit at the beginning, I don't know if I would have felt as bad as he did, because that kid was a little shit.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, you're 10, you have no reason to be throwing your toys outside the car.
The whole thing is it felt like a setup, because she's throwing it on, and she's got this look on her face, this is supposed to happen. But they didn't take that anywhere.
Well, as you progress in the film and he flashes back, the scenes in his memory change as if nobody was in the car in the first place.
Yes, because they never found any bodies.
So you get the feeling there's some witchcraft there, but they never established that these people have witchcraft and are using witchcraft to entice him. I mean,
no, and that's what makes both stories beautiful.
There's actually more in the original than there is in this one.
But there's a podcast I listened to forever ago that we're talking about the Wicker Man, and there's a lot of little bits in the original movie where like with Willow trying to seduce him, like she might, like, more than trying to seduce him, a lot of her choreography suggests she's actually doing some sort of spell. And there's, like, a lot of suggestion witchcraft in the original one.
Yeah, but there's no overt magic in either one, and I do like that.
There is a lot of bass in her pounding on the wall.
A lot of it is, rhythmic. Like, very reminiscent of, like, real-world magic. Yeah. Like, that's, with people who practice magic in real life, it is more like, you know, stuff like that.
I mean, yeah. as great as the songs were, if you're really listening to them, they're really creepy.
Yes, like, they are,
They're telling you what's happening, what's going on, and what the result of the spell that they're singing. So, like, that is how they spell cast is through song.
Yeah.
Mm. Which
is really interesting.
It is really interesting. I love the song.
I hated that element was gone.
Instead they replaced it with the fucking bees.
Yeah.
And the allergy, which served the story to no end, like, at all.
At least he had an EpiPen.
Yes. That he never got to use.
And then they revive him with it at the end. Because, like, no, you can't die yet. It's like, then why did you do like, this?
Why did you put a thing over his head and then pour a sack of bees over it?
Yeah, I don't. That's actually an edit that they took out of that cut. And then put back in later, because the one I watched didn't have that scene. I kept waiting for it.
It wasn't there.
It didn't have the... So I think that's in the extended cut of the film.
No, not the bees.
Actually, that's so we watched the unrated one. Yeah. And on the DVD, they're like, Wicker Man 2006, that's when it's from, right?
Yeah.
They're like, shocking alternate ending. And the shocking alternate ending, spoiler alert for those at home, is... they end the movie when it's supposed to, instead of having an epilogue.
6 months later where they are catfishing for another person.
Because, like, this society
which tells me that they're already setting up, just in case the crops fail, we need another fish on the hook.
Because I could be wrong, but it seems like in the original Wicker Man, they have a pagan society, they grow apples on an island where apples shouldn't grow, and they attribute it to their gods.
And that's their main export as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But in the sequel, there's a whole thing with... Hell, they're all beekeepers, and they export honey, which is not as crazy of a thing to happen.
And you do get the feeling they treat the bees as something sacred, because when he crushes one in the bar, she's like, why'd you go do a thing like that? Oh man, that chick was the one that ran the bar, was the worst actress on the planet.
The discount Kathy Bates.
Yeah. I like that. What was she? Sister Beach, I think?
Yeah.
Oh my God, she had the worst delivery. I'm like, how are you in the same movie with Molly Parker?
She's got a big body of work, but mostly like
she does.
Yeah, she's got a big body of work, and I've seen her good.
Yeah,
right. Again, it might be that a lot of people just didn't want to do this movie.
Yeah,
it's like this is a paycheck. I'll do it.
Because
Ellen Burstyn is not as good as she normally is either.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't often like. Try to place blame on one person specifically, but I honestly think that the writer-director of the remake, I think that there was a lot of actors who weren't being given the direction that they needed. Mm-hmm. I feel like in the original one, a lot of it's kind of shot more documentary style, but it's like they tried to do something similar with the new one, but instead it's like, oh, do whatever.
It's funny that you bring that up. When the film's intro, there's a thank you to the people of Summer Isle for this look into their society, despite the fact it doesn't watch like a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And there also is no Summer's Isle, so might the original Wicker Man have been the seeds for something like Fargo, the fake based on a true story?
I do love that it's supposed to be this summer ritual of rebirth to bless the crops or whatever, and the whole thing was shot in October.
Yeah, I actually had no idea. I was reading that yesterday.
Yeah, they were gluing blooms onto the dead trees just to make it look like it, and you'd figure it might have been cheaper just to hold off 6 months.
Yeah,
to the spring. But
unless the summer months were like a bigger tourist season in Scotland or something.
Yeah, I think it was really just that studio that had purchased the company that was starting to make the Wicker Man. They were selling off properties and they didn't want to be known for doing that, so they wanted to get something into production quickly and cheaply. And that was the Wicker Man. It just wound up being a good decision on their part because it made a ton of money in Europe. So
yeah.
But Wicker Man 2006, written and directed by Neil Labute, didn't fare so well.
Yeah, sorry, we already jumped the gun a little bit. Already started digging into that one.
Yeah, it's all right. It's a good time. Neil LaBute has also directed Lakeview Terrace, which is meh, and In the Company of Men, not bad. And has directed a lot of television recently, the Van Helsing TV series you can see on Netflix right now, and Hell on Wheels.
Which is really good.
He directed quite a few episodes.
Which was filmed here in Calgary.
Well, you know.
Just outside of Calgary.
I'm glad he didn't use this as a, like, oh, I suck at this, let's not do it again.
Completely destroy his career, right?
No, he learned it. Yeah. He used it as a learning experience and moved on. But the movie was budgeted at $40 million.
Wow.
What?
$40 million. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think this is post Tax Man Cage, so I'm guessing he did it pretty cheaply. In fact, it was his production company.
Well, yeah, he I didn't know this for years, and it was always like one of those mysteries, but at the end of the movie it says for Johnny Ramone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because him and Nicolas Cage were friends, and Johnny Ramone like showed him The Wicker Man, and which he loved. Mm-hmm. and then Johnny Ramone died, so Nicolas Cage wanted to like do a remake as a tribute to his friend.
Who is, like, not happy, I'm sure. Yeah. Johnny's like, no, not this one.
You know,
no.
Like, maybe it's good that he waited until after he died.
Yes.
That's probably...
You put my name on this piece of shit?
No.
Okay, so anybody want to guess what the domestic gross for this movie was?
Oof. My guess, $18 million?
Okay, Amelia?
Probably more than it should have.
That's a good answer.
Non-committal, okay.
I'm going with 7.8 million.
Okay, it actually made $23.6 million in the U.S. And
more than it should have, you win.
Yes.
More, and 38.8 worldwide, didn't even make its budget back worldwide.
Yikes. Wow.
Yeah, so...
You know, I can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Oh, you know what? Let's do a little rating guess. What do you think? We'll do this with the Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb scored the original Wicker Man 7.6 out of 10, and 3.7 out of 10 for the Wicker Man 2006. Now, what do you think the critics gave the original?
I would say maybe an acre. Like that's tough because Rotten Tomatoes doesn't necessarily take into account reviews from when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it'll be more retrospective. So I imagine it would be rated fairly high. Like, but not. It's not like people who like it really like it.
Yeah.
But I'm basically walking my way around saying, I think that a movie like that would get a high 70s rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right. Yeah, you're in the ballpark. It's actually higher.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Yeah. Anybody else want to take a stab at this?
I was going to guess in the 80s on Rotten Tomatoes.
You're totally right.
Yeah, I was going to go like low 90s, like 91, 92, but we already know it's in the 80s. So.
Yeah, 88% critic score, 82% audience score. Now... Here's where the fun really begins. Take a wild stab at the critic score on the remake.
Is it like 9% or something?
I was going 8. I was thinking around the 8% mark.
Okay, we got 8. We got 9.
We'll go with a good 7.
7. Wow, you guys are really hard on this movie. The critics gave it a whopping 15%.
Wow.
On Rotten Tomatoes. And
that
the
means
audience...
there was 15% of overall critics liked the movie.
And the audience was slightly kinder at 17%.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Just steer clear from those people who liked that movie.
Yeah, they don't know any better.
No. This movie stars Nicolas Cage, of course, and we've talked about him way, 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 way pre-Sam. Pre-Sam.
Pre-Sam?
Episode 11 was our first venture into Nicolas Cage. No, it was Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh,
Ellen Burstyn, I was actually surprised we had talked about.
Twice.
I didn't get the second one. Episode 99, Red Dragon, very popular episode.
Same time next year.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I love that movie.
Episode 92.
That was really good. I think that's the end of our connections on this, though.
Yeah.
Lili Sobieski, whatever happened to her?
She's still working.
She's still working.
She took time off. To go to the university, but now she's come back and she started working again.
I loved her in Joyride. That was a good movie. Yeah. Katie Bien was Sister Willow, was in Flight Plan. Frances Conroy, most people will recognize her from American Horror Story these days, was the doctor. Molly Parker, most people can see her now on the several Netflix shows, but most notably Lost in Space.
Yeah, Lost in Space, Deadwood. Yeah. One of my favorites, Men with Brooms.
Mm-hmm. She gets around, Canadian treasure, Molly Parker. Diane Delano was Sister Beach, was in The Ladykillers, was also what you said.
Discount Kathy Bates.
Discount Kathy Bates. Somebody tweet that to her. Michael Wiseman. Ooh. We'll talk about at some point again. He was Officer Pete, just a short thing, but I want to mention him because he was in Planet of the Apes 2001. Erica Shea Gare was Rowan Woodward, also the girl that they were looking for within the film. She's in RV and Battlestar Galactica, the 2007 revival.
You know, I think the most surprising credit out of the remake was that Angelo Badalamenti did the score. He's the person who scored Twin Peaks.
Oh, cool.
Which is like, you know, I mean, I don't need to tell anyone, like, the Twin Peaks score is regarded as maybe one of the best television scores ever.
Can you hum a few bars?
Of Twin Peaks? Well, like, yeah, I could. Like, the theme song. Like there's a lot of, you know, good tracks. Humming on podcasts never translates well, though.
Yeah, I just wanted to embarrass you.
I mean,
but it's apparently not working.
I guess, like, now is as good a time as any. Me and Amelia are doing a Twin Peaks rewatch podcast right now. And
who said you could plug this?
You know, I mentioned it before.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. When's that coming?
Well, probably the same day that this episode comes out.
Ooh, what's the title of the show?
So the title of the show is called Hire Watch With Me, because in Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me. And because Twin Peaks is so madcap and surreal anyway, the conceit of the podcast is that, well, we just smoke a whole bunch of weed before watching an episode and then piece together our observations. So yeah, it should be fun.
All right, those dream sequences should be kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, very strange.
Now that, I can understand them. They're talking forward suddenly.
It's all making sense now.
But yeah, it's very strange that such a, like, such a good composer would be attached to this movie with a fairly forgettable score, actually. There's like a couple moments during the dream sequences where it would be like his score reversed and like some weird things, but overall the music was not remarkable in the remake, when the music was such a large and like vibrant part of the original.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into some of the just key moments in this remake that are really amusing. We've kind of touched on some of the differences. The dialogue, a lot of it's the same, but one of my favorite bits is when he's kind of freaking out, searching everywhere, and starts at Summer's Isles Castle, whatever that thing is, and just opens a door and there's a woman with bees, bee beard, you know. Yeah. But like, all right, that's a that just happened. He's not even a thing. He's like, well, that doesn't stand out on this island anymore.
Yeah. I think one of the underrated comedy moments of the remake is he's going through all of his stuff in the inn. He's like, somebody gone through all my bags.
My self-help tapes.
Yeah, he's just like, I need to find my self-help tapes. They're called Everything's Okay.
They establish him picking it up and looking at it in the store earlier in the film, and then they do that one moment. It never comes up again.
Just that, no. You know, he's just not doing good. He just wants somebody to tell him it's all going to be okay for a minute or two.
I'm like, I suspect he should have been on antipsychotics.
Yes. Maybe not traveling to islands to look for lost children.
Illegally. Yes. He's performing an illegal fucking investigation.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's...
Oh, that was exactly another thing. Amelia pointed this out while we were watching it. Like, why even mention that he's from a different state?
Yeah, he's got no authority whatsoever, and he's acting like he does.
Like, right? This is Washington.
You know, it'd be really easy for them just to say he's also from Washington.
Yeah, they could have simplified it, certainly. But, I mean, I think the intent was again, to show that juxtaposition between a sort of a male-dominated society versus a female-dominated society. Mm-hmm. Clumsy as fuck didn't work, but I think that's why he came on so aggressive, and that's why he sort of went, it doesn't matter what you say, I have authority here, because I'm a man. That's what I think they were going for, but it didn't translate because they took it because of the fact he wasn't there legally to begin with, right? It was clumsy, just like the way I explained it.
Yeah, I mean, he's called over by his ex-girlfriend, Willow, who's on the island, and turns out the kid is theirs, maybe.
Like, I didn't see that coming.
Oh, yeah. So there is the...
telegraphed a mile away when you know the religious overtones are gone.
So what is the... So this pagan society in... on an island in, you know, in Washington somewhere, So if I can get this straight, it's a matriarchal society where all of the men are, like, made to do grunt work, or, like, they, you know, they're not, like, that aspect. But the way they propagate their people is by sending their women to the mainland to seduce men into giving them babies, so they can then send them letters to come to the island.
Lady Summer's Isle does explain, and she says, we like men very much. We need them to procreate.
Yeah.
Right? And she talks about their men, the men that are on the island.
Yeah.
You don't even
see them until well over an hour into the film. I actually didn't think there were men on the island, and then
And you don't see them until after that discussion.
Yeah.
Which is actually good timing.
Just before he discovers the bee fields. Or have, like, bee-shaped paths.
Just so extra.
Yeah.
The fact they mow their bee fields to look like bee comb.
And the beekeepers are, like, stormtroopers on this island.
Yes.
and so were they trying to imply that, like, Nicolas Cage being sacrificed because he had a girlfriend who had a kid with him from years before that he just heard of from out of the blue? Were they trying to imply that they just do this every year, and they just have, like, a bunch of men who live in the mainland who have children on the island who don't know about it yet?
Interesting, because at the end, the ending that wasn't supposed to be there, right, they're selecting police again, two police officers again.
Oh, interesting.
So there's something, I think there was supposed to be something, there's a subtext there that was, again, missed, about the law from the original movie. They're trying to sort of, I think they're trying to sort of capture that part of Lee's speech.
Mm-hmm.
But they, again, unless you've seen the original, it doesn't make sense because they never explain it.
Actually, speaking of like extra scenes and stuff, one thing the original extended version established that I thought was really good was not only did they establish the detective as being a very devoutly religious man, but also that no one liked him and he didn't really have a family.
Yes.
They make a point of like his coworkers don't like him. Like people are kind of waiting for him to be done at the church when he's doing the reading, and
yeah, he's carefully targeted.
Yeah, yeah. And they do that in the theatrical version as well.
Yeah, because his fellow female officer we see again on the island later.
Oh, in the original one?
I think both.
Oh, I must have missed that.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'll have to give it another watch.
Yeah. How many times have you seen this movie?
Like a handful. It's like one that you watch every couple of years, but every time it's like, this is such a good movie. I never think about it in terms of movies I really love, but when I'm watching it, it's great.
Yeah, and it's one that I do want to watch again, but because it was thoroughly enjoyable. Again, because of the songs, you want to listen to the songs because they tell you the story in a lot of ways, right? Because it was, as Jeff mentioned, it was written or intended as a musical.
Yeah, well, and the dance with the ribbons that the kids were doing outside the school, like, it furthers so much of what the society is actually about every time a song kicks up, even in the bar.
Yeah.
Like, they're almost, it's weird because sometimes they'll do a song, like the one in the bar felt it was very targeting to make fun of Howie.
Yes.
But how did everybody know it?
Right? I love the fact that there's just the village of people and they just all break out into song and just know songs all the time. It's like, what kind of world is this?
It's the one you want to live in.
Yeah.
It feels like a Disney fairy tale, except they burn you at the end.
Yeah. It's what a Disney movie should be.
And I think a lot of the music, too, is actually like a little bit reworked traditional English folk music that's just set to new music.
Yeah. Usually Disney movies burn the lead characters at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Bambi. I just made a correlation. I'm like, oh my God, they're the same. Has anybody seen The Ritual on Netflix? It's a very similar movie.
It's on our list, but we haven't watched it yet.
So we watched it.
Did we?
Oh, no, I'm thinking of a different one. I'm thinking of the one where it's a bunch of guys in Scotland and they go out into the woods.
I watched it for 31 Days of Horror, and it's a fairly similar conceit. Yeah. It's not quite the same. This guy's going to an isolated island, again, that's more of a cult like this one, and with different beliefs, but rather than a Wicker Man, they actually have like this pagan god that they've been abusing at the end, and then gets released. But it's pretty fucking gory, actually. But he's investigating missing people as well, and it's at least starts in a very similar place.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
Folkcore. I hope Folkcore just makes a big resurgence because it seems like it keeps trying to want to, and it's such a great genre that's so underdeveloped and underutilized in a lot of modern
horror. Yeah, it's a really kind of a micro genre that had like just a blip
and then comes and goes once in a while just to remind you this exists.
Yeah, and when they do it so well. I mean, The Witch is a good example of that as well, right?
So good.
Yeah. Tell us how so good. We've heard stories from Jeff on how much you like The Witch.
Oh, yeah. So I researched the Salem Witch Trials and like Witch Trials in New England a lot. It's like one of my jams. So it's really cool to see a movie that really truly encapsulates that period of time and that place so accurately in terms of how they interpret a lot of writings and a lot of the different superstitions and everything. It's like so finely crafted in terms of the details of the movie,
even the use of language.
Because it can make it
a difficult watch for a lot of people, but I think it's one of those masterpieces you gotta at least see once.
My first watch of it was exactly, and I'm like, I think I like this, but I can't understand a fucking word they're saying, so I'm going to have to watch it again.
Well, when we first saw it, we saw it in a theater, and I think that probably helped.
Yeah, but it's true. Like, their accents are, like, pretty accurate to what it seems like it would have been in the 17th century United States.
Well, even if it wasn't, it gave it an air of authenticity.
Mm-hmm. It also shows you how much our grasp of the English language has degraded over the centuries. Yeah. They're so well spoken for farmers.
So eloquent.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, I was thinking about it a lot watching, I mean, I know we were talking about the remake, but in the original one, there's a lot of DNA from like H.P. Lovecraft type stories in so much as a lot of H.P. Lovecraft in like his Lovecraftian cosmic horror focuses and centers around an otherness, like a strange otherness and a people that are unfamiliar to you and you intruding upon somebody else's world. And like that for The Wicker Man, I mean, the only thing it needs to be a Lovecraft movie is for them to be revealed to be fish people or something. But otherwise, that whole feel and vibe is really there.
I'd have to agree with you on that one, I think that is because it also has a kind of New England feel in the town as well, right? Because that's kind of sort of
Lovecraft. Also, that was one thing I was thinking for the remake. Why not have it set in New England?
Well, I was so baffled
when they said Washington.
Yeah. Like, but I mean, really? They do explain it. There's, again, part of that dialogue, there's a bit of dialogue where they talk about how they were driven out of Salem.
Right.
So they came as far away from Salem as they could, which they did, the complete other side coast, and then off that coast. So that was explained at least. I mean, it didn't need to be. It could have just been set in New England and be done with it.
Right? They could have moved it to Maine.
There's a couple things in that movie where they do try to explain some things that they do, where it would just be easier not to do them.
Yeah.
It's just valuable movie
time. You don't have to jump through hoops to explain something. You could just do away with it and make it make more sense.
Yeah. Well, that's why they have to throw in that little bit of dialogue. This is why we're here. Yeah, it's stupid, but that's why we're here.
We know. We get it. It's just we don't like to talk about it.
No, every time they try to explain something, it's like, oh, God, it just makes it dumber. Like, we were already off this train a long time ago.
Yeah. Also, speaking of makes it
dumber,
we're
just waiting for the crash.
In the remake as well, we were talking about that school scene earlier when they were talking about, like, in their context, the whole thing with the phallus doesn't make much sense. Yeah. He goes outside to talk to the school teacher, and there's a maypole outside, like in the original one, likely as a tribute. But that still doesn't make any sense with their society that they have.
No, because they never address that it's at May or around May Day. The festival that they have doesn't have the same context that it does in the original. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all these things that were really important in the original that the remake just sort of left behind, and then they just grabbed sections and went, okay, this fits here.
It's almost like they wanted you to watch the original so you'd have context to watch the remake.
Yeah.
Like, were they wanting to make a sequel to the original and then thought that it'd be easier to just do a remake, but wanted to change so many things?
Yeah. The dialogue.
I just wonder, too.
So weird.
Like, the person who directed it, I was thinking so often while we were watching it that he, like, obviously must be a big Wicker Man fan, and a part of me wonders if the writer-director...
But I don't think he understood it.
Well, a part of me wonders if it's a movie that he's watched a lot that he wanted to do a remake of, but then the Wicker Man remake is him basically writing the Wicker Man just from memory and then making the changes to update it to be a remake.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of it where it's like there's scenes that are very much similar, but then there's big sections that are very important that are not there.
Yeah. All right, you know what? I'm going to run the trailer for the Nicolas Cage here, and when we come back, let's list the crimes committed in these movies by our lead cop character.
Afternoon.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. I'll get it. Give me your hand!
Edward, I know that we haven't spoken in a few years. I need your help.
I need your help.
I have a daughter. Her name is Rowan. She has been missing for 2 weeks now. I fear she is in danger, so now I turn to you. Be careful and believe nothing that you see or hear.
Lost your bearings?
Oh, hey, sorry. Snuck up on me there.
This is private property.
Do you know her?
I don't recognize this child.
Welcome. My little girl is still here. She has been taken by who I don't know.
I'll find her.
If she existed, we would know of her.
Whose desk is this, Rowan? Hello?
You suspect foul play.
The Wicker Man returns.
Who's the Wicker Man?
I'm going to search every inch of this town.
Sir, you lamb, you will...
She burned to death. She burned to death.
I need your help.
Daddy.
All right, we're back, and well, let's list some of the crimes this cop committed. And you can pull from either movie, so I don't think it... Yeah, I guess he's actually on an official investigation, and there is jurisdiction within the original film, so yes. It's a little less breaking the law.
Yeah, a little less. I mean he's just an arrogant dick in the original.
Yeah, charging in without actual proper... authority and paperwork, you need warrants and that sort of thing. So he's definitely taking some
pushing the boundaries of his authority, but he's still within the law.
And to be honest, I think he's using my authority from God.
Yes.
Yeah. He definitely plays that card.
Yeah.
He's like, but I'm also a cop, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I just love that. Well, actually, one thing I mentioned to Amelia after we watched it is I almost wonder if there is a reading of the original Wicker Man, which could be like, our society is generally very, like, Christian. And in The Wicker Man, he is a Christian going into a society that's completely different, and they're teaching kids things that he just can't understand. And I wonder if there is a level of, like, if you're pagan, the world is like, you're seeing the world like the Christian character from The Wicker Man, and, like, that's what it's like for a pagan in a Christian society.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder if there's something there. I don't know if there is, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. All right, so Nicolas Cage, what crimes do you think we can pull from this movie? I spotted bike jacking from a little girl.
Yes.
He punches two different women in the face.
He also kicks a woman in the stomach.
Yes.
Yes.
There's like, a and she, lot she flies of assault against going wall. On.
Breaking and entering.
Mm-hmm.
A couple times he does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking at official paperwork without warrants. That's kind of minor.
Bribery.
Oh.
Because he bribes the...
Oh, yeah, he does.
The pilot, yeah.
To get to the island.
That's right. And gets that guy killed.
Yes.
That was...
Accessory to murder.
I'm like, what was that about? That guy's mouth and eyelids sewn shut. Like,
yeah. Oh, trespass.
That was...
Yeah, trespassing.
That guy died in a Saw movie.
Because, again, Nicolas Cage got dumped on the island. He had no official jurisdiction to be there. Like, pretty much everything he does cannot be covered at all.
Well, and he was told that it's a private island. He's not allowed to go there. He gets dropped off so that he can go on illegally.
Yeah.
Without permission. That's fucking trespass by any stretch of the imagination.
You might be able to argue that because, like, he was technically invited by Willow through the letter, But that's pretty weak.
Yeah, but like, he's a cop from California, so even if he's like, I'm investigating this missing person report, you are out of state. Call the FBI.
I just love to. Like, and he's on leave. He's a California cop. Like, that's just the most unnecessary detail.
It's
just like, hey, so you're a cop from Washington? No. I see this character as an LA cop.
Yeah. He's a chip.
Yeah, he does a lot of very questionable things.
Oh, how about outright stupidity? Right at the very beginning of the movie, when he goes to pick up that doll, he turns his back to oncoming traffic to bend over and pick it up.
Yeah, I have that underlined.
Yeah, because, I mean, the only reason that those people would have died is because the truck swerved to not hit him.
Yes. And they actually show that in one of his flashbacks. They actually show that the truck is swerving to not hit him.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, that's a crime to me. Because
like, that's just,
every five-year-old knows you don't turn your back to oncoming traffic.
Yeah. No, they're trained.
It's very negligent.
Yeah.
There's all negligence and a lot of, like, almost involuntary manslaughter at a lot of points, because like, he's kind of responsible for that mom and daughter dying.
Yeah, criminal negligence. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, assuming they existed in the first place.
Yeah.
He's not a very good cop.
No.
No, but he's from L.A. California.
Yeah. He's got moxie.
He's got moxie.
He's a loose cannon.
He don't play by the rules.
Yeah, I mean, even when he's like going into, like, so in the original movie, the detective's going, he's going searching through all the houses because he legitimately has a belief that they're going to kill a little girl.
I love when he sends Willow away. I feel something bad coming.
But yeah, like,
what?
In the remake, he just like barges into people's homes and tells people, like, you know, he's like, take off those masks. But it's not like the same thing. He's just being a dick.
Oh, he's checking to see if any of them are his daughter that he's never met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, and that was a, I mean, you saw it coming a mile away. And it could have worked as a device for the film, but his immediate attachment to this child that he has didn't even know existed a day before is very, very clumsy.
Yeah. I also like how he sees the photo of her and is basically looking for her wearing the outfit that she's wearing in the photo.
Yeah.
That's like, what are the odds of her she did disappear in the same clothes, but not the best detective work.
What? You're supposed to have more than one change of clothes for your kids?
That doesn't... You know, what? I never had that.
I wonder if there's supposed to be an aspect of him not saving... or causing the death of like a little girl, so he wants to make up for it by saving another, but that doesn't come across at all. But I wonder if that's supposed to be the point.
If they had not specifically stated that they never found the bodies of that woman and child, then I could have bought that. It would have made more sense. There would have been that redemption storyline that could have been happening there that just missed. This is like a pro ball player swinging at something that was like thrown way off the plate. Like, it was just bad.
I forgot that they made a point to say they never found the body.
Yeah.
What a weird and ridiculous movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's because the director didn't know where he wanted to go with it. It's like, this will be a great introduction to this character, and then set that in there. And I think he was thinking about setting it up so that it was part of the whole setup.
Mm-hmm.
But never went anywhere with it.
Well, there's also a lot of like script padding and intentional, like, let's delay the character so we can get him to the May Day ceremony. But they didn't have enough ideas, so let's do this flooded old ruins of a church that he
Which
gets
was
trapped
ridiculous.
Into the crypt of. I'm like, what is happening here? Like, why is this even here?
Who broke his legs?
But that's, I guess, where he finds the doll. So, and we get that glorious, it's burnt. Why is it burnt? What's it burnt? Why is it burnt?
No, that was when he dug up the grave.
Oh, that was in the grave. You're right.
Oh, yeah. Did they? So, if it was Sister Beach that broke his legs, and Sister Beach
is discount
Kathy
Bates. Oh, that voiceover was crazy. They got him in the bag?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, my legs. There's no muffling. I'm like, wait, this voiceover sounds like he's narrating a news piece or something. Like, it doesn't sound like, oh, he's in the bag.
So ridiculous.
It's so weird. He's actually louder.
Did Nicolas Cage get his legs broken by Discount Kathy Bates? Is that a weird, like, Misery tie-in a little bit?
I don't know. It's almost like he was just making shit up while he was in the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there was no actual script there. But the next scene, we see him like being
hauled up by his legs
into the Wicker Man.
Oh, yeah.
So we never really get to see if he can stand or not. Yeah. I kept waiting for them to blow it, and they actually didn't. So
I just can't believe that. So, Invasion of the Remake listeners out there, if this is something, please let us know. People don't put bees in in burlap sacks and then pour them into things, ever, do they?
I feel like that's
like,
not a thing.
I think, like, that wouldn't work. Like, bees fly around.
Like, unless they were super, super asleep, but it would take so long for them to actually wake up from being poured in.
Also, props to, I mean, those bees are obviously CG on his face. Yeah. Nicolas Cage was just, like, miming the whole thing.
My eyes, they're in my mouth. Why are you speaking clearly if they're in your mouth?
What is it? What is that?
My allergies, where's my EpiPen?
What a weird, unnecessary.
Oh, and let's go back to the EpiPen for just 1 second there, because there's a point there when he's running away from the hives there, he actually says, did you use my adrenaline? An EpiPen is not adrenaline. It's epinephrine.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you're going to do it fucking right, okay?
If they're all upset about him killing a bee, I mean, and I know there's some bees that don't die when they sting someone and lose their stinger, but a lot of bees die after they sting
someone.
Yeah, all
honeybees, and I think most bees do.
So, like, I mean, they don't like him smashing a bee, but they're fine to needlessly kill a bunch of bees just to sting him a couple times and then put him in a Wicker Man.
Well, from what I was reading, it was trying to make the bees were there to make him more docile, but it really wasn't apparent through his screaming.
Yeah, there's so many better ways to make someone docile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when he got stung, they cured him with the old ways. We'll just do that because we're not going to explain that to you. I'm like, well, tell me what that is. Yeah. Like, did you do any research at all? What are the old ways?
Considering they called epinephrine adrenaline, I'm guessing no, they did not.
No, I didn't see one leech.
Well, you know, another thing, like in the original Wicker Man, that like even if you don't know a lot of pagan type stuff, they make a point of him researching the May Day ceremony, and they say, oh, well, like there's the leader who will dress as like a man and a woman, and they have the fool, and they have, and so like they have him basically explain the ceremony before it happens, so when you see it, it's something you understand, and that would have been very helpful in this movie, I think.
It would have been, because he does find the book and he does do some research about sacrifices, mm-hmm. but not a lot about the ceremonies and the festival and all that stuff, kind of skimmed over that part. Again, when they're padding out to fill out the script, that's what you would have used instead of the fucking flashbacks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although that would have robbed us from him being on like a boat and then seeing a truck like hit a little girl on the boat.
There were some like fun psychosis moments. Like that was like, all right, this is going to be off the rails. The fact that they did that so early, I'm like, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's like they said, it's like, okay, he's got PTSD, and they set that all up, and they actually set that up fairly well.
Yeah,
but they fuck it up a couple times by saying they never found any bodies, and then when he gets to the island, it kind of doesn't play anymore, right? He has the flashback scene, but it never doesn't play into his story.
Yeah, which means, like, this guy is a motorcycle cop. He's just he doesn't investigate missing girls. He fucking pulls people over and gives them tickets.
Yes.
So, like, this isn't even something he should be doing in the first place, even in his own jurisdiction. Yeah. So, like, I feel like there's something key missing. Like, he already had the PTSD from something else. Maybe he was an investigating cop, has been busted back down to this motorcycle cop and yearns to get back to whatever. And this whole scenario has been crazy. Like, I would have loved if they would have faded to black as he'd been pulled up, and then roll credits, and then post-credit scene, there's like, whoa, he wakes up. It's like, that was too much chili last night.
You know what?
Because at least it would have made sense.
They should shoot that ending and re-release it with that ending, and they'd have a winner.
Yes.
You know what? It's so weird how with the original Wicker Man, like, that's a movie that is missing pieces that we can't get back. There's story beats that should be there that are not. but it still feels fairly complete. Whereas the new Wicker Man, like, we've watched the extended version. We've watched them, like, that. Like, that's a movie that is complete, but feels like there's a lot missing.
Yep.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, the chili will fix that.
Yes.
Yep.
Go in for that. Final scene, Nick.
You know, I almost feel like they should do a sequel to the remake of Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage. Like, why not? It's so notorious, and they can't make it any worse.
No, well, they'll lean into it if they did.
They would just do something like, oh, we're using the original unused script for the original Wicker Man, and then Nicolas Cage can jump off a cliff tied to two eagles.
And then the whole thing happened on an alien planet. Oh, Mandy.
Well, spoiler alert. Not really.
Not really. Not at this point. Go see Mandy.
You know what? Even with that explanation, doesn't make sense. It's not a spoiler.
No. No. It just adds to that surrealism of that movie. All right. Any last thoughts about The Wicker Man? Either one. I mean, I quite enjoyed the original, so I'm glad you suggested that to us.
Yay. Yeah,
it's such a good movie. I will say, in the remake, I don't get why they leaned into bees as the thing that's their main crop, because, like, crops wouldn't really affect the product. Like the production of honey, if they live on.
Thank
an
you for saying that. That was one of my beefs with it as well. I was like, well, it's not a crop. It's not a harvest. Well, it is a honey harvest, but yeah, that you're right. There, it's not.
Well,
it's
one thing that bothered me about this island is maybe there should have been plant life that flowers.
Yeah,
yeah, which you don't see hardly any of.
No, and if you're making bees, a lot about you need
the
bees. Them to.
You don't really see much of the actual bees, or like the where they're being kept, or people doing like. Like you see some apples and stuff in the original.
Where do you think the $40 million went into those CGI bees?
Yeah.
Like, you think that Nicolas Cage took a big paycheck to cover his taxes? Oh.
You know, I wonder, because with the original Wicker Man, Christopher Lee, big champion of the movie, like he was in it for free, promoted it for free, paid for tickets so critics could come out and see it. And like you get some of the impression that Nicolas Cage was involved with the remake because he really believed in it and also really liked The Wicker Man.
It was never screened for critics.
Yeah, it was never screened for critics. And I also wonder if Nicolas Cage, like what his paycheck was from that movie.
Yeah, well, he was a producer on it, so it means he's getting a producer paycheck and an actor paycheck.
Yeah. Big discrepancy there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage might not be this world's current Christopher Lee.
Well, I mean, if he had money in the project, then whatever he got for his acting paycheck probably went back into paying for the loss of the film, which means it didn't help his taxes at all.
No.
I mean, if anything,
actually, tax write-off, though.
Write-off.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Because he lost money, so...
Maybe the whole thing was done as a tax dodge.
Ooh, you know what? I
could be onto something here.
Nicolas Cage is in a lot of movies that don't make money. I wonder if there's a little bit of, you know, that going on.
Yeah.
If Nicolas Cage is listening to this, please let us know.
Just let us know. Send us a private message. We will not say officially on the air. Just we'll keep that your little secret, but we need resolution here.
We need to know your tax situation.
Like, I'm sorry you had to sell your dinosaur skull and your Superman comic. That sucks. But, you know, I'm curious.
Oh, Nick.
I think we're on to something. Well, help us out a little bit, too. This won't help us pay our taxes either, but, you know, if you use our promo code INVASION over at Seat Giant, that'll help us out. That'll give us a little kickback, maybe. If you also listen to us on Radio Public, we get a little kickback there as well.
Are we still talking to Nicolas Cage?
Yeah. We may have burnt that bridge.
We're always talking to Nicolas Cage.
Yes. Yep.
He's just like, oh, I'm not going
to... He's always talking
like,
to us.
He's at home listening, and he's like, I'm not going to tell him my tax information, but I will use that discount code.
I'll take it. And hey, Nick, if you're listening, you can also listen to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Stitcher, Blueberry, Radio Public, and even... Freaking YouTube.
Oh, hey, just for all of the trivia hounds out there, there's one quick trivia note to mention for the original Wicker Man, which is always a fun one, in that a lot of the film was originally destroyed. Where it ended up was basically there's a big highway in England where they basically used a bunch of like garbage and landfill to put underneath it and paved over top of it. So the Wicker, the original prints of the Wicker Man, the complete cut is somewhere under a highway.
I've heard that that legend as well. Somebody else who might destroy this film, here's another V-Trigger.
Hey everybody, welcome back. This week's movie, Wicker Man, or as I like to call it, Pay the Tax Man, which makes a little more sense because this is one of those movies that Nicolas Cage did to pay the tax man. I swear to God, I spent the whole movie waiting for him to land the plane. I had no idea what was going on. It was just very vague and just wasn't even interesting. So when you do get to the end, you know, that like final 7 minutes when they're like doing their strange ritual and stuff, they basically just stick them up in that wicker statue and light them on fire. I mean, I don't hate Nicolas Cage that much. I don't think his acting sucks that bad that we have to, like, you know, set him on fire. Sorry. It's just the movie. It was definitely not my favorite, but, you know, I'm sure he made a couple bucks to kind of get himself out of that little tax issue. So Wicker Man, don't check it out, or, you know, check it out. Depends on you, how brave you're feeling. You know, if you got a couple hours to waste, why not, right? I rate this movie 1 out of 5 smoking piles of ash.
Okay, we're back. Segways. You can follow us, of course, on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. Send us your suggestions, your questions, your comments, and get those fan challenges in. We got one coming for you next week. Hopefully, if the schedule is working out, we'll be bringing in Sean Faust from the What Does It Matter podcast to help us out with, I don't know, one of the hundreds he listed to us in his challenge.
Sean is a big proponent of less than stellar films.
Well, he should be happy. I think the Wicker Man remake is the most less than stellar film of them all.
Oh. Sean's got a list.
Hey,
he loves them all.
We did Sorceress a few weeks ago. We know bad. This wasn't even that bad. That was funny. When I got to the end of this movie, and I'm like, I've watched a lot of bad films because I didn't think that was terrible. Like, it was terrible, but on our level of terrible, it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't as unwatchable terrible as some of the stuff we've watched.
I think, you know, at the end of the day, it was at least entertaining.
Yeah. Well, Sam was not looking forward to watching that movie where I was. Like,
because I've seen it.
It's so legendary to me. So I was like, I can't wait for these overacting moments. And then I didn't realize some of the actors were also just, let's just say the line and go home. They were like one take wonders. Must have been.
Yeah,
must have been.
Yeah.
Either that or a million takes and they're all the same.
Yeah, but because you've got some pretty decent actors in there, and they were all pretty flat. I think Molly Parker was probably the most subdued performance.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen her do bad. She's in a bad movie, but her career certainly didn't suffer for it. She's been in lots of good things since.
Yeah. So,
was she Sister Summers?
No, she was the teacher.
Twins. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she was
twins,
yeah.
Yeah, she was
the young twins.
The young.
Oh, just quick moment. Yeah. There, she's the future twins that speak together.
Interesting.
Or daughters of them.
Or daughters of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or granddaughters, or maybe, or. I don't know, connections.
You know, I twins honestly everywhere. Feel like I want to try to find the script for the remake of The Wicker Man and just read it and see if there's answers there.
I know some script sites. Maybe we can track that down.
Yeah.
To be continued. All right. Well, that was the Wicker Man. Hopefully join us next week for our fan challenge.
It's been a while. This is the first time that we actually have the fan who challenged us on the episode. So this is going to be fun.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, and Sean's kind of been on this show before in little bits and pieces. His song Traumatized Children Everywhere at Christmas time.
Yeah. and the their
rather lengthy
remake of Chud.
Yeah. That I had to edit and edit and edit and edit some more.
But we got all the juicy bits there for Sean and Melissa, so.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, until next week, I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
I always return as Jeff.
I'm generally Amelia.
Just generally. Some days she's somebody else. All right, we are out of here.
What is that? What is it? Oh, no, not the beast! Not the beast!